Crispy, I've heard that you're leaving Deep Dive.
That's true. It's no fake news.
But why?
You know what they say, right? All good things come to an end.
Yeah, I am the good thing and she's feeling a bit bad about leaving us here. But
okay, if you say so.
Any fond memories?
Yes, lots. We've had something over 50 episodes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I think we've met lots of interesting guests. But I remember one particular one where this listener wrote in to us.
Yeah, what did he say?
Do you remember he said, who's this lady? She's so bossy.
Oh, yeah. One of our early episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Yeah. And then I said, well, I mean, that's because she actually is the boss.
I'm the boss.
You were the podcast boss in charge of all the podcasts
right.
at CNA, right?
Yeah. So we've had quite a good run, I would say.
Yeah. It's been fun. Yeah. So wait, you're not leaving me to do this all on my own?
No.
Who's coming in?
Wait till you see.
Hello.
Oh,
hi, Steve.
Hey.
And goodbye, Crispy. Gonna miss you. You are the legend. Remember that.
Miss Otelli Edwards, welcome. Welcome back, if I should say so.
Yes. Thanks for having
me. You've been here before.
I have been here. I used to stand in for you.
Exactly. So now you're sitting in with me.
What are we going to be doing today?
Oh, we're talking about a very important issue. We've heard about all these tariffs coming out of the US with President Trump announcing them. And we have Minister Chan Chun Sing, who is here with us, to help us break it down so that we can see just how it affects all of us here in Singapore.
So let's begin.
So hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive. One thing we do on this pod is really try to make sense of things for everyone that listening in and watching. In some cases, very big and complicated things like how global politics affect us here in tiny little Singapore.
Absolutely. And who exactly has been dominating the headlines across the world?
Well, we all know.
Yep, Donald Trump. He's certainly been keeping us on our toes, right? He's always announcing something new every other day. And he actually took office for the second time in January this year.
Yeah.
And he's already giving us a glimpse into what we can expect with the current administration.
And now, tariffs. It's tariffs-fying.
Yeah, I would go terrifying.
I saw that look in her face. It was terrifying.
I got to start getting used to his dad jokes again. But obviously, much of what happens in the US worries every government, right? Especially, I would imagine, smaller ones like Singapore, like us. You know, we depend on long-established rules of the game. So what happens now when the rules kind of change?
Okay.
When you can say the field or the grass gets a bit muddy, and when every man on the pitch, you basically have to keep fighting, right, to keep what's ours.
Because the rules have changed. So to help us make sense of this, we welcome back Minister for Education, Chan Chun Sing. He's back with us. You were previously Minister of Trade as well, right? So you know what's going on. You're also in the 4G leadership team. So we're hoping you can help us shed light on all that's been happening.
Okay. I'm glad to do so.
So, first question, we just want to get a sense of your personal thoughts. Because, you know, based on what Trump is doing or has done or has announced.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just want to get a rough gauge, right, Minister, from being a little bit nervous to having heart palpitations to like losing sleep at night or tearing your hair out. I just want to know what worries you when you wake up and you see all these headlines?
I see that smile on the face, but I'm not sure whether it's like, inside, you're like, oh my gosh, but you know.
Well, usually the first thing we do when we look at any situation of this kind is that we want to look at it neither with optimism nor pessimism, but with realism. To take a hard look at it, how it's going to affect us. But more importantly, I think, is what can we do to brace ourselves for these changes, as you have mentioned, and how best for us to survive and thrive in this perhaps more challenging environment. So I always jokingly say to people, and not so jokingly, that even if the world turns upside down, we must make sure that Singapore don't end up at the bottom of the pile.
Right. Well said.
So in that sense, you're saying we have to accept that this has happened. The tariffs are out there. He's announced it for so many countries. And now it's trying to figure out how to deal with it in the interests of Singapore in the best way.
I think there are two parts to this. The first part is, what do we do about the tariffs, the here and now? But I think there are also longer-term implications that we have to be clear-eyed in the way we approach the global situation. And we can discuss these two aspects both.
Okay. So let's get cracking first on the tariffs, because the tariffs, the list that came out, you know, there was a whole string of them for different countries. But the one for Singapore is fairly modest, some might say, 10%. But if you check our exports into the US, not so small either. You know, it's over almost $43 billion. So how should we be sort of reacting to this? Because we have a free trade agreement, but Does that mean anything in the scheme of this? Why are we still slapped with the tariff?
Okay, so quite a number of questions there. We take it one step at a time. Okay, I think the easy way for us to try to make sense of this is always to ask a few simple questions. What do all these mean for our employment opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
What do they mean for our wages or wage growth, if any? And what do they mean for the prices that we are going to be confronted with? I always come back to these three things: jobs, wages, and prices.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So to your first question, so we got slapped with 10% tariffs.
Yeah.
And we ask ourselves, so what does this mean for Singaporeans' jobs, wages, and prices? Now, the first simple economics 101 question to ask is, who's going to pay all these tariffs? Okay, so in economics 101, we will know that if the US consumer has no other alternative, then maybe they are the one having to pay the additional tariff, which means that prices for their goods or services have gone up.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is the case, then it's very clear that they will feel a bit poorer, which means that they're going to buy less from us. If they're going to buy less from us, it means that it affects our jobs, it affects our wages. Now, that's quite easy.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, Steve, you also alluded to, so should we be happy because we got 10% and others got a bit more?
Yeah.
So some people might conclude that, wow, this might be an opportunity for Singapore, right?
Right.
Because now we are perhaps relatively cheaper to the US consumer compared to others.
Mm-hmm.
And people might wrongly conclude that therefore this means it is a plus for us. And let me just explain why this may not necessarily be so. Now, the first thing is, if the prices goes up in the US, everyone in the US who is consuming this may feel poorer, which means that they might buy less overall.
Okay.
So there's a global impact. So people might buy less from us. People who sell to the US may have their jobs and employment and wages affected, and they might also buy less from us.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, even assuming that we can sell a bit more to the US, but the real question is, can we sell a bit more to the rest of the world? Because those countries that previously sold to the US might now say that, oh, it's a tougher market, and they will divert their goods and products to others.
Right.
Markets, right? Which means that those markets, the competition might heat up. So actually, what really concerns us is not so much as just how much we sell to the US per se, it's how much we sell to the whole world.
Okay.
And overall, with all these tariffs going around, including the retaliation, chances are that the whole world, the consumption and investment, they are likely to come down, which means that there's going to be a net negative impact on our employment, on our wages, right? But having said that, these are the immediate first order effect. To take that one more step further, and we can ask this very simple question, and that's the third set of issues that we have to confront with. With all these uncertainties, what are the chances that businessmen all around the world will invest more to create better job opportunities, to create more job opportunities? And I think the consensus now is that people are holding back on these investments, which means that there is a medium to long-term impact on the number of jobs created and the type of jobs created. And that certainly has an impact on us.
But I want to talk about our neighbours as well, right? Like, I mean, Cambodia, Vietnam, I mean, they're slapped with pretty high tariffs as well, like 40-something percent. So, you know, these are also the same people, you know, we buy shoes from them, parts from them. So how does it affect, you know, let's say Auntie Susie who's living in Bishan, for instance, like, is it a fact of, oh, maybe the Apple iPhone or iPad is going to cost more, but the Nike will cost less because it comes from countries of Vietnam?
The exact impact on different goods will be different. But there are a few things that we can take into account quite easily. So, for example, if the supply chains are disrupted, because now people have to shift their supply chains around, if supply chains are disrupted and disrupted seriously, chances are that the prices of goods will go up.
Okay.
Which means that even if we earn the same amount of money, we're going to buy less. On the other hand, as you have mentioned, if let's say the people in the region, they are now going to earn less because they can't sell their products as they had previously, which means that their income is going to come down. If their income is going to come down, they're going to spend less.
Right.
Which means that they're going to buy less, including perhaps from Singapore. So overall, there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's going to happen. But always goes back to these three questions, right? Jobs, wages, and prices. If people feel uncertainty and they lose their jobs because there are less jobs created, chances are that people feel poorer, they are less likely to spend, less likely to consume, which can set off a chain cycle.
So in a way, this has really triggered a bit of a glitch in the whole supply chain, the whole economy, because the way things work now is been, you know, this goes to that, to that, to that. And because of this tariffs, it's thrown a spanner into the works.
And actually, you can take a lesson from history. Almost about exactly 100 years ago, we went through this phase where in the 1930s, there were a lot of protectionist moves. It disrupted the supply chains and it brought the global economy to a slower pace. And that, some historians will argue, that could have contributed to the subsequent World War II. And why is this so serious? Because, you know, in the world, every one of us aspire to live a better life. And over the last few decades, we all aspire to live a better life by being more competitive, by trading with one another so we can produce things cheaper so that everyone can have cheaper prices and afford a better quality of life. But just as in history, if for whatever reasons people come to this conclusion that I cannot get a better life through trade, through being more competitive in my way of productions, then there are serious consequences. And in the past, wars have happened because of this. As about almost a century ago.
Singapore's got a free trade agreement, with the US. Yeah.
Doesn't that mean anything for us?
So that comes to another two very important points. In a free trade agreement, there's a clause that says that, well, the trade agreement might be suspended for national emergencies. Right. And I think the US has invoked this particular clause. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't abide by the free trade agreement. I think it's still in our interest to abide by the free trade agreements that we have with the US and other countries. So that's one. But you have raised another important point, which is this. For free trade agreements, for security arrangements, if people do not trust in those agreements and people take things into their own hands, now that's going to cause another round of uncertainty, right? On the economic side, if I cannot have an agreement with you that we can all adhere to, then you're not going to trust me as much, which means that your confidence to invest is going to come down. So that goes back to that negative cycle that we talk about. But on the other hand, on the security front, this also have great implications. If I cannot trust that we have a security arrangement in a larger geopolitical sphere, then what it means is that people will take things into their own hands. If I cannot have this security arrangement with you, I will find alternatives.
Correct.
And these alternatives may or may not be better. So, for example, if you take East Asia, for example, the security arrangements between the US and some of its major allies, including Japan and South Korea, and that has been the security umbrella that we have worked on for the last few decades. But supposing if the Japanese and the South Korean come to these conclusions that they may not be able to rely on the US as much, then surely the Japanese and the South Korean would think of alternative arrangements to secure their own security. And then you might come to a quite a different world because they might come to quite different conclusions on what they need for their defense and security beyond the economics.
I mean, it just makes sense. Every country will want to take care of their own, right?
Yes.
And look for other ways. So does that mean that we are looking at a new world order that, you know, now that not everyone is playing by the same rule book, that really changes the game?
It is a very dangerous world for small countries because over the past few decades, I think many of the countries that are poorer, smaller, they have thrived on the basis that there is a system that is based on rules and predictable rules. Now, if we enter a world where the rules are not clear or the rules are constantly evolving, then you would have what you have just described, where many people will start taking things into their own hands and ask themselves, can I trust in this agreement?
Yeah.
If I can't, then what am I going to do to
so
protect myself?
So what is Singapore going to do? Because now we know we're in this situation and we are, not say stuck, but he hasn't played by the rules, but we are still choosing to play by the rules.
I think there are a few things that we can do. Okay. The first thing, and I think the most important thing for us to do, is to stay calm. Okay. And I don't mean this as a joke and I don't mean this as a slogan. There's a very important reason why we need to stay calm. Because in a world that is a bit messy and topsy-turvy, people are still looking for places where there is stability, there's sanity, And people are looking, and people give a premium
right.
for that.
Okay.
And
if we I can feel a silver lining coming up here.
Yeah. Yeah, so if we can distinguish ourselves, we command a premium. Yeah. No, that's one. The second thing is that then we make sure that we must have the strongest team possible, because if one day, if we have to go and negotiate a new arrangements with any parties, people will only take us seriously if they believe that we are people whom they can trust, people who can deliver based on what we say. So having a strong and competent team to fly the Singapore flag is very important. Mm. But having said that, I think there are other things that we must continue doing. For example, what has made Singapore so attractive in the past? And that's because we play by the rules. We are a place whereby you can mobilize your capital, aggregate talent, and protect your intellectual property.
Okay.
We have the rule of law. We provide a stable environment for investors. And this, I think, even in a topsy-turvy world, will still command a premium. And you can argue that even perhaps the premium is even more significant. So we must double down on what we have been doing well and make sure that we stay calm,
right,
the strongest team in order to fly the Singapore flag.
Yeah, because I want to talk about Singapore's, we've had this long-standing policy, right, where we don't take sides. We try to be friends with everybody. Yeah. But, you know, as this goes on and we see, you know, how things are topsy-turvy, then would Singapore have to come to a point where you got to force to take sides?
No, in fact, that is not the correct conclusion. In fact, we have always said that in Singapore, we don't choose sides, but we choose principles. We choose principles that best support our long-term success and survival. So this includes being open, being connected with the rest of the world. The point about making friends remains. We must continue to make friends and as many friends as we can. And we must always bear in mind that even the US and the Chinese economy, even if they combine, depending on how you count, they may form a third or so about the global GDP. There's the other two-thirds of the world that is still out there that we need to trade with and we need to learn to deal with and to thrive together. So it's very important to do this. And going forward, I would make the argument that beyond making friends with significant countries, big and small, we also need to make friends and have like-minded partners, including the large corporates. Because you think about it, who are the like-minded partners that will want a global trading system that is more integrated, more seamless? And we have shared interests with many of these large corporations and other smaller medium-sized states, and including many of the large states.
They want that stability. But what happens? What if one day the US comes to us and Trump says, okay, Singapore, you choose. I'll remove all the tariffs if you stay with me, if you're my friend, but you choose.
So this goes to just now what was mentioned.
Yeah.
In fact, previously, when people ask me, should I choose A or choose B, I always reminded ourselves this. It's not so much whether we choose A or choose B, because you can get into a situation where you don't even have a choice, because people would have made the choice for you. But in order for us to have the speaking right, so to say, we must continue to remain relevant. And we must keep asking this question. What is our relevance to a particular party that's going to deal with us, be it the US, the Chinese, or the Europeans? What's our value add? And we have to keep asking these questions. So in the past, when people say, should we choose A or B, US or China, Europe or elsewhere? I always say, no, it's not whether we choose A or B. We have to have a value proposition for others to want to choose us. And this is what Joseph Liao, Professor Joseph Liao, have said it very well. Instead of asking which side we choose, we ask, how do we have people choosing us? And that's because we have value proposition. But this is easier said than done. In order for us to create value propositions and constantly relevant value propositions, we have to deeply understand others. So even in the US now, we need to ask ourselves, what are the US fears, concerns, aspirations? Okay. What are they most concerned about? And where can we, despite being a small country, where can we bring value to the relationship? Yeah. And that is important.
So Singapore, for instance, we're not retaliating with any tariffs. Is this sort of like a first, you know, sort of a goodwill gesture? Or is that sort of us staying calm and you know, see what happens?
Because we ask ourselves, what is the point of us retaliating? Because who is going to pay the higher prices? That will be fellow Singaporeans. And since we import almost everything that comes into Singapore, then it doesn't make sense for us to impose tariffs for us to spite, to if you like, cut our nose to spite our face, right? Yeah.
So the geopolitical landscape, I think, you know, it's constantly evolving, right? And it seems like it's getting more and more tumultuous. And do you think how worried though? I mean, people should be, because some people will say, oh, but you know, it doesn't affect me. Maybe they don't see it right away, but maybe over time, right? I mean, things will start costing more, and then there's just more cost of living pressures.
Actually, yeah. What will this mean for the typical Singaporean who is not interested in world politics, geopolitics, you know?
Well, it goes back to the three things. I won't use the word worry, because I think worrying is not a proactive or helpful term.
You're just stressed about it.
We have to keep asking ourselves, realistically, what can we do? And there are many things that we can do, from staying calm to diversifying our relationships, our trade relationships, our production chains, our supply chains. So there are things that we can do.
And because of COVID also, we've gotten more nimble, right? Like our supply chains and everything, we've diversified our eggs and chicken from Brazil, for instance.
Should we all be reacting right away? Or is it better to just take a bit of a wait for now? Chill, wait and see a little bit, see how things pan out, because...
Well, I don't think that would characterize how we... do things. We are neither chilling and not doing anything, or we are reacting. Actually, at every stage of this journey, we are asking ourselves, what are the positive, constructive actions that we can do? So we go back to just now what we are talking about. Staying calm, looking at the situation objectively is important. Understanding the fears, concerns, and aspirations of the potential partner is important.
Okay.
Asking ourselves, how do we remain relevant, is critical. Asking ourselves, how can we continue to diversify, is important. Now, let's bring it back down to, what does this mean for the average Singaporeans? Prices. How can we make sure that even if the price of goods is they are all going up across the world, how can we moderate this? Number one, we make sure we diversify our sources. Mm-hmm. Number two, we make sure that we maintain the strength of our Sing dollar, because we import pretty much everything that we consume. And that, we need to make sure that we manage our finances and reserves well. So there's no regrets in order to manage the prices. We can't say that we will insulate all the price shocks across the world from entering Singapore. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that we can, just as during COVID and in previous crises, with a strong dollar, with a united citizenry, we can try to calm things
right.
up. Mm-hmm. Why I say this unity is so important? Because what prices am I going to charge you? If I know that you are panicking, if I know that you have no alternatives, I'm going to jack up the prices and bring you to the cleaners. But on the other hand, if I know that you have your people are calm, they are united behind the leadership, I'll talk seriously to you. And if I know that you have alternatives because you have diversified, then you are in a much better position. So I think these are things that we can do. And very important for us to do well and do together.
But then again, does that mean that Singaporeans should expect things to become more expensive?
Well, we must brace ourselves for this, because the supply chains may be disrupted. It may not be being more prices rising across the board. They may rise at different rates, but we must make sure that we are able to have the resources to help in a very targeted manner, whether businesses or the residents who are most in need.
So, Mr., I'm also wondering then, because, you know, certain products will cost more. Let's say if it's from the US, for instance, possibly cost more. Whereas other stuff that's manufactured in other Asian countries, maybe not. So then do you see us, like our buying habits, possibly change? That we're going to be more selective. You know, where is this product coming from? And, you know, what the cost is involved?
Actually, from the experience that we have through COVID, I think Singaporeans are very practical. They don't very much look at where this product is coming from per se. They look at what prices. Is this a price that is affordable for the quality that is given to us? So, for example, I mean, if you look at COVID, during the COVID days, I mean, you saw me running around trying to buy eggs from in Europe. You saw me buying prawns from Saudi Arabia and so on and so forth. But all this opens up options for us. All this tells the world that we have different channels to get our goods, so that we are not necessarily held ransom. And through the COVID process, we have also shown that we are adaptable. A very good example would be fresh chicken. At one point in time, it was very difficult to get fresh chicken into Singapore. Then we changed our consumption habit to take on more frozen chicken or frozen proteins. And that allows us to have if you like, greater bargaining power because we are no longer held ransom by our unchanging consumption habits.
Yeah, I've certainly changed my eating habits, and you know, because frozen and tinned, actually sometimes it works out cheaper than what's
you do
fresh.
The taste test. People can't tell the difference usually.
And there's a very important role that Singaporeans can play to help us all to get through this, because when we are united, we give our team the strongest mandate to go and negotiate.
Right.
When we are not panicky, when we are prepared to change our consumption habits, we tell people and show people that we have the confidence to ride through this and we have options. And most importantly, if we keep asking ourselves this very important question, what's our value proposition to any potential trading partner so that we can value add? Because we must be realistic. Nobody is going to deal with Singapore on the basis of charity nor sympathy.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
People want to say that,
like, what's in it for me? Why are you of value to me?
Why should I sell you this, all right? Even if you pay me a bit more, just as during COVID. But I will sell you this because, you know, there's a relationship going on and I need something else from you. That's why in Singapore, you know, previously when I was in MTI and when our EDB officers go out to woo the investment, it's not just about which investment makes money, but which investment allow us to position ourselves in the supply chain to be more important in the supply chain. And that allows us some bargaining power in this difficult situation.
Yeah.
We want to be the guy that when you're choosing to play on your team, you're like, yeah, I want that guy that Singapore.
Yeah,
wants.
Because we can be trusted. Right, we are reliable. Yes. You know, we're not. We you know, we don't create unnecessary trouble. But I just want to bring us everybody back to the fact that you're an education minister, right? And you know, when it comes to students, what sort of you know conversations should happen in the classroom and at home? I mean, to help them understand about, you know, this geopolitical shift.
I just had informal policy discussion last Friday with the residents, and it's very much like what we have in the school. Mm-hmm. There are a few parts to it. First, we help our people to understand why is this happening, right? Because it's no point trying to say that, oh, you're the good guy, you're the bad guy, or who is right and who's wrong. I think we put that aside. But we ask ourselves, why is this happening? Then second, we ask ourselves, so if this is happening, what can we do about it, right? Proactively, constructively. So I think what is happening around the world is also a good lesson for ourselves. You see, with trade, with globalization, it always means that you need to help your people adjust, because there'll be some people who gain and some people gain more. Some people might gain less or not at all. And we always need to remember this. And this is a reason, and this is not a sales speech for SkillsFuture, but this is a reason for SkillsFuture. Why is that so? I always use this very simplistic example. I say that, you know, in Economics 101, we all learn this, that, you know, the story usually goes like this, that, country A is producing 5 apples and 5 oranges. Country B is producing 5 apples and 5 oranges. Then the Economics 101 tells you that, if only they specialize, then we'll produce more apples and oranges. So if country A produce all apples, they may produce 12 apples. And country B produces oranges, they may produce 12 oranges. And if they specialize, voila, from a total of 10 apples and 10 oranges as the GDP, we now have 12 oranges and 12 apples in the GDP. I say, okay, very good. That's only Economics 101.
Was that in your Cambridge? When you were in Cambridge?
This one, A-level economics.
Yeah, yeah. But otherwise, they use avocado or different fruit. Right.
So I'm the dinosaur age. We use apples and oranges. But actually, Economics 102 tells you that, you know, country A, from producing apples and oranges and now produces only apples, which means that the previous orange growers need to be retrained and upskilled, right? But if you don't help the orange growers to upskill, they might be left behind.
Right.
So in Singapore, why is it that we spend so much effort to help our people upgrade? It's because we know that with trade, we know that with technology, the jobs will constantly change, because the best welfare for our workers is a good, solid job that they can earn their keep with dignity. And that is why we invested so much. And in many of these countries, why are they getting into trouble with so much public angst towards globalization and trade? It's because they may not feel that anybody is helping them along. And that's why you have this backlash. Now, but having understood this, then we should take some precautions to prevent ourselves from falling into this problem, right? Another reason is, a lot of people talk about competitions. We have to ask ourselves, how can we build the networks, the widest network possible, for us to tap on the expertise of all these other growth sectors, growth niches, where they may not be here physically, but we can partner them so that we can grow together with them. And that is our evergreen strategy. In Singapore, no matter how many people we have here, it will be still
right.
a few yeah. million people. We can't yeah. compete with the mega cities of the world. But we can connect to the growth nodes in the world, whether is it in the US, in Europe, in China and elsewhere, so that we multiply our capabilities beyond the number of people that are, can be in Singapore.
And we're also relevant to everyone. So in that sense, we have many fingers in many pies.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? And we are,
and that's part of the diversification as yeah. well, right? So you do not rely on one particular
yeah. exactly.
Trading partner or technological partners. But in that process, it also goes back to answer your other question, which is why would people want to work with us? Mm. Part of the reason they want to work with us is because we have certain capabilities.
Right.
But there is silver lining at the end of the day. I mean, despite all these tariffs and all that.
But you better tell people who are listening in, they're still worried. I'm just going to use the word worried because that's what they are. Because of everything they're hearing and seeing, people cannot help but be worried.
If you like to use the word worried, then I would say this. It's all right to worry, but make sure that we don't just stop at worrying.
Okay.
We make sure that we translate the worry, if you like, into positive actions and understand very clearly where we can double down on our strengths and continue to build on those strengths and where we need to be clear-eyed and where we need to make the adjustments in the way we diversify and continue to build those bridges and links so that we are valued not just bilaterally, we are valued because of the networks that we can
But how can Auntie Susan in Bishan and Ang Mo Kio do this? She's thinking, how do I double down? What should I do? Because,
there are very many things that any average Singaporean can do. So let's go through them one by one. So first, just now we talk about staying calm and expanding our choices so that we are not held ransom by anyone.
Okay.
So that allows us to diversify our sources of goods imported. Mm. That means that we lower the chances of us being held ransom by the price shock from
But what can she do? She's just working for a company as an employee. She has no control
over
her any of that.
Consumption behavior.
Okay.
Now we come to her job and her wages.
Yeah.
The more that Auntie Susie, as you say, can work with people from different backgrounds, the more we are able to bring people together, then that is a clear advantage.
Okay.
The third thing that we can do is all of us can stay united. All of us can make sure that we have the best team to fly the Singapore flag so that we can win the investments, we can negotiate the best trade deals for ourselves. And we pride ourselves as a place whereby we obey the rules, we play by the rules. And I think in times of turbulence, people are also looking for these places. And so even in the investors that come into Singapore, and decide whether they want to put their investment here. Whether is it Auntie Susie or myself or yourself, all of us are ambassadors. We can fly the flag and show people that what a society we are, safe, secure, open, inclusive, and it inspires people to put their investments here, and that allows us to create more jobs and to have better employment outcome and better wages for our people.
So, Minister, actually going back to my first question, it seems like you're sleeping quite well at night. you're
calm.
Not nervous.
He's
calm. He's very calm. Yeah. And I'm sure there are things that obviously worry you, but generally, I mean, that's just the mindset that we have to, because it's pointless being stressed out, right?
Or I keep telling myself that I must sleep well.
Yes.
Because I must have a clear mind. And it's not just me, but my entire 4G team. Mm. We must be very clear eye about the challenges, but also the opportunities. So we are not going to lose sleep over things that we cannot control.
That's true.
We're not going to ask the irrelevant question like, is this good? Is this bad? Is this right? Is that wrong? We ask ourselves, what is the world going to be? So I say, neither pessimistic nor optimistic, but realistic. What can we do? What must we do? And we double down on the things that we can do and we do our best and we let the outcome take care of itself. And I think that's the best way for take care of fellow Singaporeans.
Yeah.
Because we are here to play the long game. We are not here just for the next 1 week or 1 year. Because when we negotiate with any other countries to say that we want to have a particular trade deal with you, we want to attract a particular investment, we want people to know that this is a serious minded leadership team, is a serious minded people, is a serious leadership team with backup by a cohesive public that will say that we will deliver on our words. If we promise you to take your investments, we'll make sure that we deliver on our promises.
Yeah.
And this is not about the next 1 or 2 years, because in many of these investments that we are trying
to attract, longer term
they're much longer term.
Yeah.
When I was in MTI, any of the plants that are in Jurong Island or in Tuas, they will tell me that I'm going to be around for the 10 to 15 years before I get back my return on investments. So can you provide me with the confidence that you will have such an environment for me to to make my money
we
back.
We want to be that friend, la, that country that everyone wants that everyone to say, trust, I trust these guys, they're going to do what they say they do.
And you have that long-term record, track record to show that that's the kind of country that we are.
Well, Minister Chan, thank you for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us. We hope it has been insightful for all of you listening in. If you have any thoughts, any questions? Actually, don't send the questions. I won't have the answer anyway. So
we'll have to invite Minister back here again.
I'll email this to you and you can give the response. But thanks so much. We love hearing from you. So do keep joining us. Otelli, why don't you sign us out?
All right. Well, I guess thank you as well. I want to say many thanks to our podcast team. We've got Tiffany Ang, Joanne Chan, Junaini Johari. Oh, quite a few people there. Sewin and Hanida Amin. Thank you so very much.
Thanks so much. Don't worry, that was a pop quiz because I know it's your first time. Oh, yeah, right, so it's okay. Next time. Thanks, guys. See ya.